Greetings in Jesus' name once again tonight. Appreciated the opening, Brother Galen. There's good thoughts from Acts there about being in the presence of the Lord. It's an exciting thought, also a sobering one. But a welcome one, too. I'm happy tonight to have my wife along here this evening. So that's a special part of the evening. Tonight, I want to think about families. I want to think about how to keep your family strong. We like strong things. Us men, we think we're strong. We like to be strong. As people, we celebrate strength and we strive for strength. A lot of people work out and lift weights to get strong muscles. We select strong furniture when we pick out furniture at the store. We build sturdy, strong buildings. We drive durable, strong Chevy pickups. We like strength. And we like strong families. And no matter how much we like strength and strive for strength, the fact remains that sometimes our story is a bit the opposite of weakness. We can't get away from weakness sometimes in life. Whether it's the very young or the very old or the sick or the injured, weakness enters into our story from time to time. And when we think of families, we would like to think that our family is strong and it's always going to be strong. But there's a good chance that we'll find some weak spots also as we go through life in our families. When my wife and I were first married, maybe about 2 years into our marriage, something like that, I think we had one, maybe two children. We went to a big family reunion there and out our way. Now, this was going back, I think, three generations to my great-grandfather, I suppose. And so we went, and there was a lot of people there. And I noticed that the spectrum was pretty wide. It was diverse. Like, there were some conservative people there at the reunion. There were some middle of the road, and there were some pretty far out. I'm not sure if they were Christians or not. Really wide spectrum after three generations where that ancestor was a member of a very conservative church. And then about a month later, we were at the same place for another reunion, going back to the same era of time to celebrate a different ancestor, but going back three generations. Those two men lived in the same community, went to two different churches, but close churches, sister churches. And at the second reunion, the spectrum was not nearly as wide. There were a lot of conservative people at this reunion. And I noticed that and thought about, you know, why would that be? And here we are, just starting out our family, and well, we'd like to see our family be faithful and strong after three generations. And at mealtime, we sat down across the table from an older gentleman that was there, an older relative from going back a couple generations. And I told him that, you know, here we are, we're just young, we're starting out our family, and we were at this other reunion, and now we're at this reunion, and there's a bit of a difference here, and maybe you can give us some wisdom, give us some pointers, like how can we, you know, your family turned out pretty well, like how can we see faithfulness in our family in three generations? And I never forgot what he told me. He said, strong families, first of all, he looked right at me. He said, strong family starts with you, the man. And he said, you ask for wisdom, and it says in James that if anyone lacks wisdom, ask of God, and God gives it to them. And then he went on and said, he quoted from James 3:17, he said, the wisdom that comes from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, easy to be entreated. And he went down over those and talked a little bit about each one. He said, it's first pure, and he talked a little bit about that, and then peaceable. And I thought, that's some wisdom right there. And that stuck with me, and that's what I want to preach about tonight. I'm just going to go down over that verse and think about those. Because I think it was from him, but I think that was from the Lord. And there's a lot of wisdom there for us today. And I'm sure that there's a few more things that you could add into the mix to make a strong family and to see faithfulness in three generations. But this is a good place to start. James 3. Let me back up. I missed something. When I asked him about that, and when I said, look, we see faithfulness, and the first thing he said was, it was not our own doing, it was the grace of God. That was the first thing he said. In humility, he said, it was not our own doing, it was the grace of God. And then he talked to me about wisdom and so on. So here, let's look at James 3. And let's read 13 through 18. Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. But if ye have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not and lie not against the truth. This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. For where envying and strife is, there is confusion and every evil work. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace. So we talked about wise wisdom here. In verse 13 starts out like, who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? So who is a wise man or a person of understanding? It's not just men, but it's men and ladies and anyone. The NASB says, who among you is wise and understanding? So this is not just for men. And though I'm thinking about the family tonight, it's not just for you if you have a family, but it's definitely for parents, it's for grandparents, and it's for children who will someday be parents. And it's for others who are part of the family of God. We're all in a family of some nature. And so these things apply to us, and we can take them seriously. There's a contrast in this passage between the fruit of good wisdom and the fruit of bad wisdom. Or maybe the fruit of following good wisdom and the fruit of not following wisdom. He says, where envying and strife is, there is confusion and every evil work. And that's just the reality of it. And you can see that all around. Envying and strife, there's confusion and every evil work. What's the state of family life in our society? There's envying, there's strife, there's confusion, there's evil work. Everywhere. The family is really broken down. And it's not quite just in the world, is it? Sometimes it touches us in the church also. We need strong families. And it takes strong people to have strong families. So how can we be strong and have strong families? Where envying and strife is, there is confusion and every evil work. Strife is self-seeking. Or factious, selfish ambition. I thought it had to do with fighting, and maybe it does, but strife really means selfish ambition, self-seeking. If you are in a family relationship and you're self-seeking, that's introducing strife. Where envying and strife is, then something's wrong. And he says, don't lie against the truth. Glory not, lie not against the truth. Sometimes it seems like the weakest are the most critical of the strong. Don't pretend that you have everything together if that's not the case. But it doesn't have to be that way. Every one of us can have and apply wisdom that is from above. As I said, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God. God gives it. He gives it liberally. He doesn't upbraid. He doesn't scold you. He gives wisdom to those who ask and want to get it. So, if you ask for wisdom and God gives wisdom, the wisdom that is from above is first pure. If you want to keep your family strong, you must be first pure. What is pure? So simple. We know what pure is. We don't even have to define it, right? Pure, unmixed with evil. What were we talking about the other night? Was it waste places or rot? I think there was another term. But there's no spot of decay, all right? It's pure. Who is a good father? Who is a godly mother? Who is a wise person? Who has a strong family? One who is pure. First pure. And that's where to start. If you don't have purity, then the rest of these are less significant. And to be a wise parent, to keep your family strong, you must be pure. Purity in the marriage. Purity in personal matters and in relationships. And men like to think that we're strong. But if you're not pure, neither are you strong. That's a sign of weakness. So we must be first pure. Glory not, lie not against the truth, but answer honestly, are you first pure? Listen to some words from wise men. Who shall ascend into the hill of the Lord, or who shall stand in his holy place? He that hath clean hands and a pure heart, who hath not lifted up his soul unto vanity, nor sworn deceitfully, he shall receive the blessing from the Lord and righteousness from the God of his salvation, penned the psalmist David. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God, Jesus said. Keep thyself pure, Paul instructed Timothy. Cleanse your hands, ye sinners, and purify your hearts, ye double-minded, James admonished. Beloved, now are we the sons of God, and it doth not yet appear what we shall be, but we know that when he shall appear, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is. And every man that hath this hope in him purifieth himself, even as he is pure, prophesied the Apostle John. So to keep our family strong, we must be first pure, and secondly, to keep our family strong, you must be peaceable. Peace kind of follows purity and depends upon it. A pure heart opens the door for a peaceful spirit or disposition. And in life, we find stress. We find opportunities. We find situations where it's just not natural to have peace. And we can't escape it, but the peace of God can still reign even on those stressful days. Fathers, heads of the home, we face many things that can test our peaceable disposition. You know, with job, different aspects of working on the job, or maybe there's breakdowns or bad weather or business deal just didn't turn out. There's bills, there's debt, there's temptations. Vendor relationships, maybe customer relationships, animals that don't go where they're supposed to go. There's just a lot of things that can take peace away from us and put us into a cranky mood. But if we're going to keep our family strong, we must be peaceable. So when we come home, hopefully all those other things don't follow us in the door. So that when we come in the door, we can introduce peace into the home and not stress or tension. I think it's in Ecclesiastes where it says, better is a handful with quietness than both the hands full with travail and vexation of spirit. And sometimes we'd make a more peaceable dad, husband, if we would just get a hold of that and rest in that. A wise father knows that the pursuit of more and more is not worth giving up peace in the heart and peace in the home. Sometimes we'd make a better daddy if we wouldn't spend so much time and energy on that second handful or even that armload. Better is a handful with quietness than both the hands full with travail and vexation of spirit. And for mothers too, peaceableness in the home. And when the children come home from school, when father comes home from work, you can have an atmosphere of peace right there, ready for them when they walk in the door. And we've had 6 children. We know a little bit of some of the things that work against peace also, from teething babies and scrapping preschoolers and, you know, all the laundry and dishes and the toys that never stay where they belong. All of those things, you know, they can threaten peace too. But if you have gotten peace with God and man, then you have what earthly governments would love to have by using all of their weapons and power and wealth, but they can't get it. That's something very powerful, peace. And when you're at peace with God and everyone around you, that peaceful disposition influences the atmosphere. And that's for everyone. And on the other hand, if there's conflict and problems with others, that puts a strain on peace at home. And we found that in our home, just a practical thing that we can do that makes peace come is put things away. And we can just clean up the floor and declutter and sweep the floor and put things away, and we're just feeling pretty good. It just feels peaceable now. And I don't know if you find it that way, or maybe you find it different. You like things to be more comfortable. I don't know. But it works for us. We just put things away that are out of place, and peace comes. Seek peace and pursue it, penned the psalmist David. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God, Jesus said. Follow righteousness, faith, charity, and peace, Paul instructed Timothy. Grace be unto you and peace from him which is and which was and which is to come, prophesied Apostle John. Third, to keep your family strong, you must be gentle. Now, purity and peace, that's sort of like inside. They affect out. I mean, there's outward workings of that, but, you know, gentle then is manifested by someone who is pure and peaceable inside. Gentle comes from a Greek word, obviously, that is also translated mild, patient, and moderation. So let your moderation be known to all men. Children and wives appreciate a husband that is gentle, and one who is patient, one who doesn't fly off the handle when he's riled. Maybe ladies are naturally better at being gentle, because sometimes dads forget that strong, tough, manly dads are supposed to be gentle. But it's a descriptive term for a wise person, whether it's a father or a mother or a child or a grandfather, gentle. Let your moderation be known to the family. How huge of a reaction is expected when the milk spills, or the dish breaks, or the cow gets out, or the car gets dented, and things go wrong? Moderation, gentleness, they can be tested. And the servant of the Lord must not strive, but be gentle unto all men, Paul instructed Timothy. Number 4, to keep your family strong, you must be easily entreated. Easy to be entreated. It's approachable, easily asked. To entreat is to ask or beg for something. And we entreat God. We ask him many things with our requests. We come to him over and over again. We ask for all kinds of things, and we're not too bashful about it. We ask him for a nice day. We ask him for health. We ask him for blessings. We ask him for, you know, I don't know if you're Hunt or not, but you probably ask him for a big buck. And you ask, we just entreat God. We ask God for a lot of things because he's easily entreated. He's easy to be entreated. And we're to be like God. We're to be easily entreated too. So children come and they ask us questions. They ask for things. They ask for a lot of things. And that doesn't mean that we give them everything we ask for, just like God doesn't give us everything we ask for. But easily entreated. And sometimes we get so busy and we're occupied and preoccupied, and they ask us a question and have a request, and it's easy just to say no or just push it off because we're distracted and we don't want to deal with it. But that conditions them to not come to us for questions, especially when the questions are weightier and they're going to take more time, and then now they're afraid that, you know, dad's not going to have time to answer this, or mom's too busy. We need to be easily entreated and make family a priority and keep it there instead of just letting work or problems be more important than the children that we're raising. Number five is full of mercy. I think that's the one. Wisdom is from above. First pure, then peaceable, gentle, easy to be entreated, full of mercy. God is a God of abundant mercy. Again, thinking of God as being a pattern or an example. And just like God shows mercy, you know, a parent, we have opportunities, plenty of opportunities to show mercy and compassion instead of justice. And sometimes we need to extend forgiveness and show mercy. And sometimes we need to ask for forgiveness and ask for mercy too. But we can show mercy when, you know, the cup gets spilled at the table or the floor gets tramped with dirty boots right after it was mopped. You know, there's a time for mercy. Mercy when a prize tree gets chopped down by a little hatchet, or mercy when children's mistakes are costly and inconvenient. When the tools get left outside and it rains, or they're even lost and we can't find them. Just mercy. Not justice. Someday, if the Lord tarries, our children may become our caregivers, and we might need some mercy. We might need some patience in those days, and we would hope that they remember the times that we were merciful to them and forbearing. So we can show mercy, full of mercy. That doesn't displace the role of justice, of course, or of fairness and of all of that, but it's there. The wicked borroweth and payeth not again, but the righteous showeth mercy and giveth, penned the psalmist David. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall obtain mercy, Jesus said. For he shall have judgment without mercy that hath showed no mercy, and mercy rejoiceth against judgment, James admonished the believers. Number six, full of good fruits. To keep your family strong, must be full of good fruit. And good fruit is a theme that illustrates the result of walking with God as opposed to serving Satan. And good fruit, bad fruit is a comparison, the contrast that we see from time to time. And it's one that's we can easily relate to. We probably, almost everybody here likes to eat fruit, and we like to eat good fruit. I don't think a single one of us enjoy eating bad fruit. And I really like to eat apples. We have some apple trees, and there's just something satisfying about eating an apple. But I have already taken a bite out of an apple, and inside, I thought it was a good apple, but inside, it wasn't good. And that's just an unpleasant experience. Now, hopefully nobody bites us, but if they do, if they would, are they going to find the inside of us to be as shiny and nice looking as the outside? Full of good fruits. Through and through. Galatians speaks of fruit as sort of an outworking of who we are and what we are. I just want to read a few verses here in Galatians 5, contrasting that good fruit and bad fruit. Galatians 5, 19. Now the works of the flesh, which would be the bad fruit, are manifest, which are these: adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lasciviousness, idolatry, witchcraft, hatred, variance, emulations, wrath, strife, seditions, heresies, envyings, murders, drunkenness, revelings, and such like, of the which I tell you before, as I have also told you in time past, that they which do such things shall not inherit the kingdom of God. But, here's the good fruit, the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. Against such there is no law. And they that are Christ's have crucified the flesh with the affections and lusts. If we live in the Spirit, let us also walk in the Spirit. Let us not be desirous of vainglory, provoking one another, envying one another. All right, well, we can look at these lists here. The works of the flesh, the drunkenness, envy, adultery, and so on, they result in distrust, fear, hatred. They work against strong families. Some of that diversity in the one family, I would say, is a result of some of this stuff coming out in our family. We could sum it up as bitter envying and strife. Right there it is, selfishness. And just, this is how it comes out, and it destroys a family instead of it being strong. But then the other side, the good spiritual fruits of wise parents that are listed here, love, joy, peace, and all of these, they build trust, security, and love at home. And they help to maintain a strong family. I guess you could say it's not rocket science. It's just simple, but it's a matter of putting it into practice. And he, a godly man, shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water that bringeth forth his fruit in his season, the psalmist penned. I am the vine, ye are the branches. He that abideth in me, and I in him, the same bringeth forth much fruit. For without me ye can do nothing, Jesus said. Not because I desire a gift, but I desire fruit that may abound to your account, Paul instructed. Number 7, to keep your family strong, you must be without partiality. Get back to James. Without partiality. And I think we all try to be as fair as possible and impartial, but I suppose it can be a trap for anyone, being partial without partiality. Not all children have the same talents and abilities. Not all have the same intellectual capacities. There are differences of personality. There are differences in sensitivity. There are boys, there are girls. They're different, every single one of them. And we need to, just relate to them differently, but in a way that assures each one in our family of our love and devotion. Be gentle and easily entreated toward one and all. And maybe it's easier to be gentle and merciful toward one than another. Maybe. But if we're going to be full of mercy and be full of gentleness and all of these things, then we need to be without partiality, even if it takes a little bit more for some. That's not being partial, if you know what I mean. Like a school teacher probably spends, a school teacher has a variety of students. I never taught school, but I think I'm right. And maybe they have to invest more time in one student than they do another student to get them to the same level of comprehension or of understanding. That's not being partial. That's just matching the energy given to what's required. And I think sometimes, you know, for our children, we might be able to reassure one with a sentence, but it takes, two chapters, if you will, to comfort the other one. And if that's what it takes, then that's what we give. Not just say, well, I gave a sentence, I'm going to give a sentence. So, these things also belong to the wise. It is not good to have respect of persons in judgment, the proverb states. I charge thee before God and the Lord Jesus Christ and the elect angels that thou observe these things without preferring one another, doing nothing by partiality, Paul instructed Titus. But if ye have respect to persons, ye commit sin and are convinced of the law as transgressors, James admonished. And number 8, to keep your family strong, ye must be without hypocrisy. Without hypocrisy. Hypocrites, they do one thing, or they look one way, but really are another way, or they try to deceive people, and they imagine that others are blind and they can fool them. And Jesus had strong words for hypocrites of his day, and he left no doubt that he wasn't fooled by it. God's not impressed with hypocrisy. God knows our hearts perfectly. He can see right into our very being. He can see what we do when others aren't around. And you might fool man for a while, but it seems like hypocrites eventually mess up and get found out, and then trust is broken, relationships are broken, and respect is lost, so security is compromised, and the family suffers. So a wise father, a wise mother, an honorable youth ought to pull the weeds of hypocrisy as soon as they can, when they're very small. When you're pulling weeds, the bigger it is, the harder it is to pull, and the bigger a hole it leaves, and the harder it is to repair that hole. Without hypocrisy. And children know what we are at home as parents, right? They see us at home. They see us out in public. They see us at church. And they know if it's not the same. They know if there's hypocrisy going on. And they hear you talk to this person, and they hear you talk to that person. And if you're putting on a good face here and then telling this person the bad face side of that person, you know what I mean? Like, they see that happening. No, we can't have any part in that. And if our public persona tells a different tale than who we really are, that's not lost on the children. They learn it, and they may even do it better. Hypocrisy. But then again, if you are first pure, and hypocrisy isn't really an option. So purity first is where it's at. Purity first in all of life is what makes a good dad or a good mom. Purity first makes a good grandpa and grandma. And grandparents need to be pure too. Purity first makes young men and young women at peace and pleasing before God and a light to the world and useful in God's kingdom. Purity first. Keep thyself pure. It's a battle, but it's one that's worth fighting and one that's worth winning and one that proves your strength. So we looked at these things. A reality check then. Victory, like wisdom, comes from above, from the Lord. We should remember the warning in Jeremiah 9. Let not the wise man glory in his wisdom, neither let the mighty man glory in his might. Let not the rich man glory in his riches, but let him that glorieth glory in this, that he understandeth and knoweth me, that I am the Lord, which exercise loving kindness, judgment, and righteousness in the earth. For in these things I delight, saith the Lord. That relative said, it wasn't our own doing, it was the grace of God. And if your family is strong, and hopefully it is, give God glory. Don't puff out your chest and think, look what I've done. Look at these children. Aren't they looking nice? Give God the glory. And finally, we think about the lasting legacy, the enduring quality of a strong family in the generations to come. It's one thing to have your strong family among your children, but what about the generations to come? I see that in verse 18. And the fruit of righteousness, that's the fruit, the result, what is born, righteousness, is sown in peace of them that make peace. This is the effect on the generations to come. The NLT says it this way: and those who are peacemakers will plant seeds of peace and reap a harvest of righteousness. I kind of like that. Those who are peacemakers will plant seeds of peace and reap a harvest of righteousness. That's the result down the road. So you ask God for wisdom that is from above, and then apply that wisdom in your life and be first pure, be peaceable, gentle, and all of these things. And that's the DNA that's in the seed of peace that you sow in your child's heart and life. And that seed in a good heart will sprout and grow and bear fruit, the fruit of righteousness. And you will reap a harvest of righteousness in your life and in your children's lives for generations to come. Those who are peacemakers will plant seeds of peace and reap a harvest of righteousness. To be sure, you know, children, all children, will face the wiles of the devil, the snares that are out there, and will have to rise up in victory or be overcome. And we live in perilous times, and in spite of our best efforts and the strongest family that we can muster, children may wander and go astray. That happens sometimes. They make choices for themselves. And we have to remember that we are parents, but we're only the parents. We are not the good shepherd. We do our best with our tender lambs. And when they stray, if they stray, and when they stray, it's the shepherd who goes after them and brings them back. As parents, we can bleat for them. We can tell them of our love. We can just do the best that we can. We can call for them to come back. And the good shepherd hears our cries. And he has a greater love for them than even ourselves. And he's the one that goes after them to bring them back. That's his job. He cares for them all. And our job is to be the best sheep that we can be. And we know that all the other sheep have their own will and heart and make their own choices. And even the precious lambs that we have born must choose their own way. And it's just part of living in this fallen world. We can't control them as they go through life forever, but we can give them a good start and support them on their way and pray for them every day and wherever they are. And so in conclusion, work the soil well, plant good seeds, water them faithfully, see that they get lots of light and warmth, and protect young, tender plants from blight, from disease and pests. And look to our Heavenly Father for wisdom through it all, and then give him the credit too, to keep your family strong. I don't know if when you look down over this list of, you know, purity, peaceableness, gentleness, easy to be entreated, all of these things, without partiality, without hypocrisy. You know where you're at with all of those in your own self. And I thought it might be worthwhile to go home and talk to your spouse and say, what do you see? You know, how am I in these areas? And ask for some honest feedback. And then if you're asked, you know, reciprocate, you know, give honest feedback. in humility and love, not in critical spirit or thought or word at all, but just, I don't know, evaluate one another. That's your homework assignment. That's the invitation tonight, to go home and just be real with each other and do that. With these thoughts, let's stand for closing prayer.